Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
I don't know that this qualifies as a full Chubb date, a full Nick Chubb update, but I think this is the continuing in the line of kind of a succession of Chubb dates that we've gotten on Nick Chubb's future in Cleveland for Mary Kate Cabot, the Morning Boys, earlier today.
At the moment, it has, yes, because if Jerome had not taken the pay cut, or if maybe the Browns had traded him, it would have opened the door for Nick Chubb to come back. But Jerome taking the pay cut means that he will, for all intents and purposes, be around. And the Browns do not want to have Nick here as their fourth running back, where, you know, he just wouldn't be getting the reps. So unfortunately for him and for Browns fans at the moment, that's really not in the cards to bring him back.
I think I'm going to spin it this way. Mm-hmm. As long as Nick Chubb is a free agent going into the season, and until he signs somewhere, there's always a chance.
So you're keeping the dream alive is what you're saying.
Mostly because, you know, like, we all looked at Jerome Ford taking a massive pay cut and thought, well, he'll be here. But if some team got really desperate for a running back and came along and offered something, a fourth rounder for Jerome Ford,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Browns should do that and then bring Nick Chubb back in a one-year deal, yeah?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It feels like every team that is doing, like, making trades or having some sort of involvement, like the Cowboys yesterday, right? Jane Slater had to come out and be like, Nick Chubb was not a part of their plans. But every single one of them, it feels like, is involved in Nick Chubb in some way, or at least having the conversation around Nick Chubb.
There is a part, though, where just in terms of the way they're built, and I always struggle with this, if you're only going to carry three running backs, what ratio do you want here? Do you want two guys that can be the bell cow and one speed back? Because speed backs are really hard to find in the middle of the season, like home run hitters.
Yeah.
Like the Deion Lewis's type, even though Deion never really worked out here in
Cleveland. Or the Jerome Ford type.
Or do you want to go ahead and go one guy who can maybe do 15 to 20 carries a game and then two speed backs, but knowing that the drop from Quinshon Judkins, if he got hurt in the middle of this year, to is Jordan Howard still alive? Like a Jordan, like a street free agent, or even D'Ernest Johnson. That's a pretty significant drop off.
Yeah, I will get it more like I would pay Nick Chubb to be basically a coach here, but he doesn't want that for himself.
Yeah.
You know, so we can't even think about it from what do you want from a offensive standpoint, and does he fit into that? It's Nick Chubb. Like, he'll fit into anything. It's just, I really don't think he wants that. I think he believes that he can still do this.
Yeah, and by the way, I actually agree with him. So, like, if that's what Nick Chubb wants, that's what I want Nick Chubb to get. But there's another part of this where it's like, I also understand the Browns very clearly didn't bring Joe Flacco back a year ago because they didn't want to put extra pressure on Deshaun Watson. I couldn't think of a greater pressure to put on Quinshon Judkins in his rookie year than having Batman take some carries from him or sit behind him on the depth chart.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And Samson, we got to treat the same way too, right? I know he's a fourth rounder, so we don't treat him the same way as Judkins. But between the two of them, like, they got to be looking at this season as if they're just battling out to try to be the premier back on the team while understanding that it's going to be running back by committee anyway. But, like, that's like the door's open for them, and it just isn't there for Nick Chubb.
I do think it opens up this conversation. And we've had some, like, adjacent conversations to this, but never like the head-on conversation.
Yeah.
I think this is shaping up to be the kind of year where it could get really awkward for the Cleveland Browns if you're on a 3-14 trajectory or first pick trajectory, Nick Chubb goes elsewhere, especially if it's on a really good team and we get some shade of Nick Chubb elsewhere.
So I don't think people are going to look at this like it's a Baker Mayfield situation. We're, like, constantly monitoring it, and then you're seeing how good he is or how good he isn't. Because Nick Chubb, let's say he goes to another team. Let's just call it an NFC North team, whatever. Let's say he goes to the Bears and gets 1,000 yards. Are we thinking Nick Chubb's going to have 1,000 yards 3, 4, 5 years from now?
No, but I think you're thinking kind of long-term about this. I think it'd be really painful for Browns fans to be sitting in the middle of a lost season and watch Nick Chubb still producing. Like, I think right now there's not a lot of pushback on it because we saw what Nick looked like the six games last year.
Right.
And so I do think that changes. Like, I think it's so easy to sit here and say, it's going to be a 3-14 season, and hopefully we see the young guys play and we see an identity. Maybe they surprise us with six wins. It's one thing to say that with a clear head and a clear heart in May. And by the way, Nick Chubb's going to go somewhere else and have a good part of the season. Like, the Ravens were winning. I do remember this distinctly. The Ravens were winning when they had moved on from Jamal Lewis. And the fans were beside themselves when Jamal came here and had a resurgence over the last two of the last 3 years of his career.
It's an important distinction, though. Like, I feel like if you said the Ravens were winning, right? Like, if the Browns were a 9-10 win team and Nick Chubb would have been the difference between them making the postseason or not, or even being a postseason threat or not being, because you gave up on Nick Chubb and then he's awesome elsewhere, then I think people would be outraged.
Oh, but I think
people would be livid.
I think if you go, and again, the devil's in the details here, so we can get down. I can get down the rabbit hole pretty quickly here, but yeah. Like, if you're a 6-11 team and the running backs, it's just a running back by committee and they're all just okay. Like, not great. Not like, what was CBS Sports saying that Quinshon's going to...
Judkins would be the best rookie rusher this year.
So, like, if you've got, like, two 600-yard rushers and another 400-yard rusher and Nick Chubb's putting 1,200 yards up somewhere... I think you are going to see Browns fans ask themselves, but could he have been the difference between
eight and nine and eight or ten and seven? And we'll do the segments in many ways. I'm trying to figure out which path is the makes them the most angriest, though. Makes the Browns fan the most angriest.
I do think it's if Nick goes elsewhere and is on a contender, killing it, and the Browns are bad. If the Browns are going to be bad no matter what, you'd rather Nick Chubb be here and you get to watch him be like the bright spot on a Dookie team.
Well, and so the other side of that, too, is there's nothing worse than giving up on someone when you feel like even if he was bad, he could just be a good piece to be around the team. Like, if he stinks, it really wouldn't have mattered because he's just so good with what he'd be able to teach these guys.
So it's weird because, like, I'm not sitting here pounding the gavel saying, you got to bring Nick Chubb back.
It feels like that ship has sailed, does it not?
It does. And even, honestly,
Browns want to move on. They drafted two running backs for a reason. We got to, at some point, I'm not saying now because that'd be way too early, but at some point we do have to turn the page.
And honestly, I think this organization, it does feel, maybe this is a positional thing, it always felt like they were going to be itching to move on from Nick Chubb before the end of his career, whether he got hurt or not.
Yeah, right? That's fair.
Like this, like, and maybe I'm projecting a little bit on the analytical organization.
No, but what's fun about that, though, is because we had the convo at last hour talking about, like, well, how do they view the running back position? And I thought in my head they were moving away from trying to be one of these dominant running teams that they tried to be with Nick Chubb. Two teams in the NFL tried to do it, Titans and the Browns. Titans had more success than the Browns, but that was still just one AFC title game for Tennessee. I thought they were moving away from that. But then we talked about it at 3:00, and it's like there's an avenue where they swerve into the running back tandem even harder now.
I think it's the only way. I think if they want to have any prayer at putting a team out there that surprises people, and by the way, it still might not make the difference.
Was that the last 2 years and how the NFL changed, or was that the last 2 years where they, for the first time in Stefanski's time here, did not have a running game, and he realized just how bad that was for him to not have a run game?
I don't think the 2 years are the same. I think 2 years ago it was losing Nick Chubb to injury, and then they just is never pivoted. They never really, and then I think they got caught in between the offensive identities they were trying to run with the passing game. Last year, I think it was flat out that scheme didn't work, and your head offensive line coach could not coach his way out of a paper bag with the scheme that they were trying to run.
I mean, Stefanski in Minnesota when he was the OC had Dalvin Cook. Like, he's always had a premier running game. And when he first came over here, all anyone talked about was like, yeah, that run game, that's going to come with him. That's what he does. And then he got here and he had Nick Chubb. And, like, he thrived. But then, you know, last 2 years without a run game. Now, again, without a quarterback, it's also gone downhill too. But there's been no run game. And I wonder if Stefanski, he cares about that.
I think the blending of both worlds, Stefanski loving to run the ball, I think it's a lot more about what guys do up front. I think it's about movement. I think it's about how you use the wide zone than it is about a specific back. Everyone would always love to have a McCaffrey or a Dalvin Cook or a Nick Chubb, but I think they'd be perfectly content with the O-line deciding the quality of the run game, just given how the wide zone operates anyways. And then I think the front office will always want, I'd rather three running backs, three good running backs instead of one great one. Like, if you had your draft, if you luck into a great running back, you're not going to kick it out of bed for eating crackers, right?
But like, sure.
At the same point, I think it's easier to sustainably build an organization or build a football team with three controllable, affordable, good running backs than it is one elite running back.
Well, that's the approach they're going to have this upcoming year.
Yeah. Well, and then,
at least
listen,
ideally,
if Quinshon just pops off and is a 1,500 yard back and he's the heir apparent to Nick Chubb, oh, great. Then you have one. But I don't think you go looking for those. Like, I don't, when you take Quinshon at 30, what is it, 36? You're not thinking like all-time great running back. You're just like,
no, that's Ashton Gentite.
Be a really good running back, and we'll see where you go from there.
Yeah, that's being a Gentite at number 6 overall.
216-474-0092. If Nick Chubb balls out elsewhere, will you be mad at the Browns? I don't think in every scenario. I think Quinshon can go a long way in people's minds in this. If Quinshon has like a 1,300-1,400 yard season or a 1,200 yard season with a fair amount of touchdowns, I do think that will mute some of the response, but if these running backs are just okay and Nick's incendiary somewhere else, I think it gets really hairy for them.
Not to go back to Baker, but why did we hang on to all the Baker Mayfield conversations?
It's because Deshaun Watson was booty stank.
It's because Deshaun Watson sunk. Exactly right.
We got Jason Lloyd coming up. We're going to get his thoughts on the Cavs down 0-2. Maybe a Chubb date from him or two. We'll talk about his thoughts on all the Shadrama with Shador's camp that we've seen over the last week or so. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. And we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know him, you love him. 92.3 The Fan, The Athletic, so many more. The man, I've said this about everybody that has multiple jobs in this town. People call him the Seacrest of Cleveland. He is Jason Lloyd, and he joins us now. Jason, welcome to the show.
I wish I had Seacrest checkbook, I can tell you that.
I would, yeah, but you'd have to be Seacrest. That's the problem. You think that guy likes himself? I'm going to say no.
All the Wheel of Fortune people have turned on him.
Yeah, why?
Oh,
look
really?
At him.
Yeah, he was like beloved by everyone, it felt like, except, I don't know about Nick, but then all of a sudden he got on the Wheel of Fortune and now everyone seems to like dislike his, he's no Pat Sajak.
He's no Sajak, he's no Vanna.
I haven't watched that show in 20 years, so. Man, I can tell you.
We got to get you to drink more because it does. Like if you're having a couple pops by about 7 o'clock at night, it's a great show to drink along to.
I don't even drink anymore. Like hardly ever.
Jason, that's how I am too.
Me neither. Big fudge.
I accidentally told Nick, I'm like, I'm like forever sober the other day because it was just joking in the long period of time I haven't drank because I have a 2-year-old, and Nick's like, wait. You're abandoning the crew? You're leaving us? You're done? I'm like, no, I'm not done. I promise.
I'll come back one day.
I just like being old and home and not. Yeah, I don't do any of that. I'm not any fun anymore.
Yeah, that's where I do my drinking. I mean, that's. I got a fridge in the garage just for beer, Jason. I've made it. Like there's no better than that. Just being walking out, being like, I've got 60 Coors Banquet and 60 Dos Equis. I don't have that much, but I've got that. I got 120 beers in my fridge whenever I want to go.
We have a drink fridge in the pantry that consists of Sunkist, Dr. Pepper, Coke Zero, and chocolate milk for my son's protein shakes. And
all
that's
right.
About it.
All right, I'm rescinding the Cleveland.
Iced tea and lemonade. Iced tea and lemonade.
This is, I mean, well, just get a little. Just, yeah, no, I'm not going to do it. It's fine. I believe you. So, how are we feeling about game 3 for the Cavs here, Jason?
Better if they're playing. Better if all the hurt guys play. I mean, listen, this isn't the 15-16 Warriors they're playing, okay? Like, are they out of the series? No, I don't believe that they are. Now, if they don't get Darius and Evan back, are they out of the series? Yeah. Yeah, it's probably over. They probably aren't going to win the series without two of their big three or four, whatever catchy phrase you want to use for them. But if they can get these guys back on the floor, they can absolutely still win the series.
Have you found this incredibly hard to talk about? Because we just don't have any answers as to whether or not these guys are going to actually be on the court. So it's almost like you're discussing two different games, Jason. Like if this guy plays or if all three of them don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unbelievable that like for the second year in a row, we are back in this position after going through everything last year with Jarrett coming out of the Orlando series and then into the Boston series, and every day it was, is he going to play or is he not? And, like, somehow we found ourselves right back in that same spot. I've already said I left the arena after game one believing Darius was going to play. I was fairly surprised he did not play game two. Just the indications I was getting was that he was probably going to play, that he was going to play game two. And then for him not to play, I have no explanation as to why he didn't. But, you know, it sounds like hopefully, maybe, possibly, I know, I think Joe just wrote a story for us, just tweeted out, trending as if all three could play in game three. If that's the case, if they get these guys back, absolutely, this is still a series. I mean, they got the work cut out for them, no question about it. But the Cavs are the best team in the East for a reason. And even Darius, I know Kenny said they don't want Darius out there at 50 or 60%. I'm looking at this going, you know what? 60% Darius isn't so bad when you compare it to 1 of 14 Ty Jerome. And that's not to bang on Ty. Ty's had a tremendous year. He's had a wonderful year. He's one of the best stories of the NBA. But, you know, when Ty Jerome is taking 20 shots as he did in game one, you know, you're not setting yourself up in position to win. And Ty's got a specific role that he's really, really good at. And when you expand that role and you ask him to carry more of the load than what he's capable of, it's probably not fair to him or to the rest of the team. So even a 60%, 70% Darius, given the alternatives, that's not so bad.
Jason, if all three do play, let's say all three are ready to play the rest of the series, so if we get the health in line there, what's the key to winning this series and winning four out of the next five games?
What's the key? So getting them back on the floor, you have to see how effective they are, right? Like, we're just assuming this is a video game and you put them back on the floor and now they're 100% and everything's as normal. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. We'll have to see if they're limited at all in any way. Evan is still, I mean, we're only a couple days removed from an ankle. I don't want to say a significantly sprained ankle, but from a significant enough that he couldn't really bear much weight on it. So we have to see what kind of shape that he's in. But Evan, to me, like, they don't have an answer. Evan Mobley could be the most important player in the series, the most impactful player still to go, because I don't think Indiana really has an answer for him at either end of the floor. I don't know who they use to guard him with. Again, if he's effective, if he can move on the ankle and he can do all the things that we're accustomed to him seeing, I just think that he really provides a dimension that they're not accustomed to. Yes, Indiana plays fast. Yes, we know that. But it's not as if the Cavs aren't accustomed to playing fast as well. They've had plenty of games this year with pace ratings into the hundreds, and they've done just fine. So, I mean, the key, obviously, this is a team built on three-point shots. But beyond that, they defend really well, and they defended really well for 47 minutes the other night, and they lost the game in the final minute because they couldn't get the ball across half court.
Jason, something
in the final minute of the game.
Yeah, something I thought was really interesting was how, you know, we have all three guys that are out, and I'm sure if they could be out there, they'd be out there. But then you see Donovan, and Donovan is just, he's clearly playing injured, and he's playing his ass off. But it reminds me of LeBron in a way, just an unending desire to win. Do you see that as well?
You are 1,000% correct. Donovan is obsessed with winning in a way that not every player is. And, I mean, I had that conversation with LeBron when he was here multiple times his last year here. Of his point was, like, not everybody's built for it. Not everybody's built for the moment. Not everybody is obsessed with winning. Donovan is. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's made his money. He's on his second max contract. He's got all the All-Star games. He's had MVP votes, All-NBA. He's had all of that. What he doesn't have is anything beyond the second round, and he's well aware of that. And he, to see him, like I said this earlier, if anyone should be sitting, it's probably Donovan with a calf, because when you're playing through calf injuries, I mean, we all know calf injuries can lead to Achilles. So he's literally putting it all on the line because he knows that this team has a legitimate chance to win a championship. And that doesn't come around very often. And I was having a conversation with him late in the year about, I said, you know, you may just have to wait. You may just have to wait out Boston. And this was before Shams reported that, you know, the Celtics may have to break, or they probably will break things up, because it's always been trending that way. If you pay attention to this NBA salary cap and you see where their money is and where it's headed,
it's untenable. And so it was always sort of a factor that the Celtics may have to split up some pieces here this summer. And I said, you may just have to wait them out. And he was like, you know, I've heard that before in my career at times in Utah. He's like, I reject that. I'm not buying that. And like this is their time as far as he's concerned, because you're never guaranteed. Yes, the Cavs have this core for 2 more years before they have their own hard decisions they have to make. They have this postseason and they have the next 2 years to go. And then they're going to have to make some really hard choices. But there's no guarantee that they will have the health that they had during the regular season. I know they're beat up now. There's no guarantee. Who's to say that another super team doesn't form this summer with Kevin Durant moving teams or Devin Booker? You just don't know. So you have to – who saw the Warriors coming in 2016? Nobody. Or 2015, mm-hmm. 2014, 15. Nobody. When LeBron came back, everybody thought it was going to be Cavs Spurs for the next 4 years. So you just never know. You have to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you at that moment. And this is a team built for right now to win a championship. And he sees that and he understands that. And he is consumed with the idea of winning at a level that probably not many other players are, especially guys who haven't gotten it yet. You know, he's never mentioned as one of the all-time greats. He's not in the Michael conversation. He's not in the LeBron conversation. He's not in that tier player. He's not a top five player in the league. He probably never will be. But that's not to take away from what he is. And what he is an absolute freaking warrior to go out and do what he did the other night and score 48 points on one leg, getting double teamed, triple teamed, getting harassed the way he was, playing through injury. He was an absolute monster in that game, and I think he'll continue to play that way. And really, I just hope for his health. I really hope that he's not subjecting himself to further injury by playing on that calf.
Jason, looking to the Browns, we've already had a few bits of Shadrama, as we're calling it, Shador-based drama with his photographer and, I guess, social media dude. I don't know all the things that Boog does, but tweet about potential disrespect, that the Browns were disrespecting him with not giving Shador the number 2. That was deleted. And several other things. Are the Browns... Yeah, as Boog supposed, are the Browns going out of their way to try and humble Shador?
No, he's a rookie. He's a rookie fifth round pick. Like I don't get hung up on the social media. I truly don't pay that much attention to social media. I know it's weird for a sports writer to say that, but I really don't.
You don't drink. You don't pay attention to social media. You don't sound like a reporter to me.
I'm a loser. I've tried to tell you that. If you listen to the people who don't like me very
next
much,
you'll tell us you don't even like Springsteen.
But no, I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with humbling him. It's just the way that they're going to operate. Like, how many guys go down the list? How many guys, rookies, got the number that they wanted? It's not a long list. If you go back and look at the video, I think didn't Judkins say he wanted 1 or 2 or something at that video at the Browns first posted? He didn't get it. Are they trying to humble him? Veterans always have dibs on jerseys. It's the way it is. He hasn't earned anything. He's a rookie. And if he lives up to what he thinks he can become, he'll get whatever number he wants. But he's got to prove it on the field first. That's all.
What's your expectation? Is tomorrow a lot of the media gets to see Shador throw a football in person for the first time?
Oh, I'm sure it'll be picked apart and over-examined and under a microscope and all that. And I mean, what are we really going to learn, guys? It's May. But we'll everybody will run out there and get the footage and have all the talking points and all that. You're not going to really excuse me. You're not going to know anything until July, August, when this really turns into a camp battle. It'll be fun. Give people something to talk about.
Jason, if I asked you for percentages of which for each of the four quarterbacks, of what percent each quarterback has a chance to actually to win the quarterback job, the starting quarterback job for week one, are the percentages equal? How would it skew?
Oh boy, I hadn't really thought.
Yeah, I'm asking you to do math. What a D move by me.
Well, I mean, I'm already on record. I was on with Ken and Anthony a week or two ago. I thought Flacco's the odd man out in this if both rookies perform to the level. I mean, Dillon Gabriel's on this team. He's a third-round pick. If you're presuming that Shador makes the team, and I do believe he'll be on this roster, then that leaves one spot for a veteran, and I just think it's Pickett over Joe, because that's who they pursued first. That was their intention. One of the first moves they made was go out and acquire Kenny Pickett, and they gave up a draft pick to get him. So I mean, maybe I'm way off on that. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I see this. I think Kenny Pickett has the highest odds of being the week one starter. But I do think that both rookies are going to play often and play early in the season, because you got to find out what you have. Very clearly, they told you without telling you their plan was to go get a quarterback in 2016 2026 to move down in the draft the way that they did, to acquire the extra first round pick as ammunition. By taking Dylan Gabriel in the third round, certainly nobody saw them taking Shador in the fifth. Their plan all along, it seems, and I, by the way, I applaud it. I've been on board with this all along, was to go find a quarterback in next year's draft. They believe that there's going to be a lot more talent to pick from next year. So that leaves 1 year to see what you've got in these guys. So you have to see what you got. It's the same reason that I was advocating to play Dorian. Why waste the time with Jameis? You know what Jameis is? Play Dorian and see what you have. And either you're going to run into something that you didn't know you had, or it's going to be so bad that you'll be in position to then go get what you need. And it turned out to be B, where they were in position to go get what they needed. The only problem was there were no groceries in the aisle. Like, what they were looking for was not available in the draft. So it's sort of the same thing. You're still in that boat. It's just two different faces now. It's Dylan and Shador. I think will each have opportunities. They'll each have game opportunities, provided both make the roster, and I believe that they will. And then you see, did you run into something with them? Did you find something that you can move with going forward? Okay, great. Now you've got two first-round picks and your quarterback in place. More than likely, they'll probably be back in the quarterback market still in 2026.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see it that way as well. But is Stefanski then on like a free roll? Or if we put him up in this, I don't know that anyone else does at this point, but this like Kyle Shanahan air where you can take anybody and turn him into something, then shouldn't we be judging him based off of, even if it's just two quarterbacks taken in the third and fifth round, whether or not he's able to get the job relatively done with either of those quarterbacks or even Kenny Pickett in the mix?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to base his job security on whether or not he gets a third or fifth round pick to perform to the standards of an NFL quarterback. And by the way, nobody with the Browns operated through that draft as if their jobs are on the line. Can we agree on that? If you were afraid that you were about to get fired and you didn't want to get fired, you wanted to keep this job, would you trade down from 2 to 5 and pick up a pick for the next general manager to make the pick?
No,
nobody's going to do that. So obviously, they are operating as if they've got the security that this is a transition year. Ownership sees it that way, and they are safe. The risk in that, and the only risk in that, is that you have to trust the ownership to see it through. And the only reason I say that is because I've talked to people who were in that building who said they got a glowing job review that they're like, even those guys have annual reviews, even at that level, just like all of us have to go through. They go through annual reviews. Got a glowing review, got a glowing report on the annual review, was fired 2 weeks later. So you just have to take ownership at its word. And if you believe them, then that's why you operate as if you do. If Jimmy says, hand up, Deshaun was on me, whatever. There are no quarterbacks. This is not a good – and by the way, it's not just the Browns saying that. The entire NFL just told you that this was not – in their eyes, we'll see if they were right or not, this was not a good draft for quarterbacks. So we'll bide our time, we'll chip and putt, we're going to play these young guys, we're going to see if we ran into anything or not. And if not, and the overwhelming evidence, how many times do you actually find, yes, the Brock Purdy's exist? Yes, they do. The Tom Brady's exist. But the overwhelming evidence is you don't very often find a starting quarterback in the third round and the fifth round. It can happen, but it's not likely. So if this indeed is the case again, where we don't have the guy, they don't have the guy, they will go back in the market in 2026. And these guys will still be here to make the pick and coach him.
Jason, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you, even the lies about you don't drink anymore. We appreciate it all.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, see you guys.
Jason Lloyd there of The Athletic on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll react to his Cavs and Browns thoughts in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I have a little more hope now.
You have to have a little bit more hope. And obviously the article that Jason was mentioning and referencing from Joe, I read him between the break, and he mentions the optimism that all three could play. There's a couple key points from this article, and please check it out. He's got more info in there, obviously, but I think is pertinent to our conversation here. He says a league source with knowledge of the Cavs workout Thursday, so the swelling on Hunter's injured thumb has subsided. That's good news. Mobley and Garland, though, were moving as though they're trying to play through lower leg injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So that was according to the practice and what they saw there. Another league source saying he doesn't think he has a choice in relation to whether or not Darius Garland would be out there.
Wait, so Darius
like
doesn't?
Like he's got to be out there essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think when you've been, is it four games across 2 weeks almost? I think this would be a now or never moment.
It feels like a now or never moment. All participated in the walkthrough and the practice and everything like that. So like, I think this kind of speaks to what Chris was telling us an hour ago, which is these guys desperately want to play. This is what you live for, to play in these type of games. It's just whether you physically can or can't.
Yeah, I know. I kind of already spoken my piece on this. It does make me incredibly uncomfortable when guys that we have lauded for being great players and you know, winning this year and winning the last 3 years. I remember when I came back and I made the mistake of saying I would trade Darius for Donovan if it came to it, right? And I was about run out of Cleveland about 2 months into being back in Cleveland. And to then get to the point where people are questioning Darius's toughness or even Evan or DeAndre's toughness makes me really uncomfortable. And like, that's such a personal accusation to level at somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a part of me that wonders how much of this is gamesmanship from the Cavs. We have Fedor saying, kind of maybe putting more doubt on the fact that any one of those three guys could play. Now Joe is saying something to the contrary, efforted by sources.
For sure. And that's a great point by you. Like, we do have to have our eyes wide open to the idea. They're open, not shut this time. To the idea.
It's a different movie.
That if Joe, and Joe's credible, but if he just says league source, we don't know. Maybe the league source is trying to get him to say something and push it one way or another.
And by the way, the Fedor stuff, they could be, you know, talking to him a different way.
For sure. So exactly right.
And listen, when push comes to shove, I think it's much more likely that a team is pushing optimism that a player's going to play to confuse your opponent than he's not going to play.
Yeah, right? If you spend all that time game planning for the big three of them to be back out there, That's much different than if they obviously aren't out there.
So I this is why when they're conflicting reports or conflicting emotions on how I almost always err on the side of they're not going to play. But I don't know. It's going to be. I think I'm finally ready to get ready for game three. Like, I think I am. I'm ready to see who's going to play. I'm ready to see if they can answer the call. I won't be ready if they get blown out. Yeah, but right now, I'm excited for this team to have this opportunity.
I'm excited for the opportunity. I guess I'm just no part of this has changed in my mind as far as the opportunity presented, though. You know,
oh, the farther we get away from game two, I've cleansed myself of that ugliness.
Really? I told you yesterday I wanted it immediately. I wanted to cleanse myself of it right away. I was itching for the NBA to come down and be like, you know what? Screw 3 days off. You're playing tonight and we're putting it on prime time.
Now, the thing, one of my favorite things, we actually have a clip that we just threw up on 92.3 The Fan in the break. Go ahead and watch it on Twitter. But that's about a minute and a half. Just wait for that and then go watch it on Twitter. But Jason's kind of passionate talking about Donovan's conviction to win. Yeah. I thought was really cool.
Oh, it was fantastic. And I don't know that enough people are giving Donovan nearly the credit that he deserves for playing the way that he has and playing through what he clearly is playing through. I mean, this is, you want to talk about somebody that is just displaying openly how badly he wants to win. It's just very cool.
And just watching, like, this goes back to the conversation we had about injuries, where it's like, part of the reason why I just wasn't, when people say you got to hold the team accountable, it's like, okay, like, there's plenty of people screaming about, you didn't execute. Yeah, no bleep, they didn't execute. How about watching a guy who's clearly fighting through a serious calf injury? How about watching that guy play his ass off and almost like single-handedly come within 30 seconds of getting a win over a team without three of the five other best players.
Like, yeah, and just leaving everything out there.
I really do hope, like, with so much of the conversation has been, are we really enjoying this ride? Are we really making sure to enjoy even the ups and downs? Are we really enjoying what Donovan's doing? Because, you know, whether it's what he's done the two previous years where he was scoring 28 points a game, or this year where he's vacillated between I'm going to take a step back and then I'll go over and bulldog, I hope we enjoy this. I know it's not LeBron. It's a different relationship to the player, but Donovan is fulfilling so many promises and he's putting his heart out there every single day. And as a Cavs fan, like win, lose, or draw, I just feel really proud that Donovan's the best player on this team and to watch him every night. We've gotten to a point where it feels like an honor to watch him put his heart out there.
Yeah, he's exactly the type of player you love to root for. And there was multiple instances in that game when Mathurin committed the lane violation on the free throw and then basically fell over Donovan's head in the process. And Donovan went down, and he was down for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. I'm like, 11 times out of 10. An NBA player in that instance takes himself out of the game, and that's it, and it's over. And then he got back up to have another instance 30 seconds later. It's wild to think about.
The Lead, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.